words on repeat. The only person he's ever met that makes him feel like happiness is easy. I stare into Henry's eyes for so long it becomes awkward. His date clears her throat.
You coming, Grace?
Sasha calls. It's not fair to do this here. To drag him into my confusion. I squeak a goodnight and make my way up the long hill to the cottage so fast I break a sweat. The others follow lazily behind. I've had 10 minutes to compose myself by the time they arrive back. But it still isn't long enough. They use the bathroom and say their goodnights, and then it's just me. Alone. I grab a hoodie, sit outside, and light the fire pit. Henry is all yours. Henry is all yours. Henry is all yours. I hear it over and over again, until my vibrating phone snaps me out of it. A picture of Dottie and Althea under the stars on a Greek beach. Their favourite place in the whole world.
Arrive safe. Don't forget to water Belinda.
Belinda being her Boston fern. Why she gave her houseplants human names, I will never understand. I smile at the picture, then hit call. Dottie answers.
What's wrong? Is it Belinda?
I laugh. I just missed you. I wanted to wish you both a lovely holiday.
What's wrong? She asks again. And don't say nothing. It's almost midnight and your voice has dropped a whole octave.
Henry, I say.
Ah.
Dottie listens while I explain that we're better as friends, and I finish, fully expecting her to tell me I'm doing the right thing, that I shouldn't repeat the mistakes of my past. But then she releases a truly aggrieved sigh, and I get the feeling if she was in front of me now, she'd want to bang my head against something.
Do you know what this year has taught me?
She says. Tone clipped. She doesn't wait for me to answer.
That life is short. That you only get one opportunity to live the life you want to live. When you told me what had happened with Althea before, I knew instantly what I'd done. I'd lived my life the way I always had, hiding away my true self, terrified of how people would view me if they knew the truth. And it had cost me the love of my life. The love of my life? Althea? Hiding her true self.
I press my forehead as my brain tries to realign, to reshuffle all my memories of them together.
Two best friends,
or so I thought.
God, how did I not see this? Dottie,
I gasp, hand clutching my heart.
Now, I don't want any fuss or fanfare, she insists. I have already spent my whole life making this into a bigger thing than it needed to be. I am in love. I am happy. It took me almost 80 years to realize that is what's important, and I would be remiss if I didn't pass on some of my wisdom before it's too late.
I wipe a tear from my eye. I have so many regrets, but I'm so glad this isn't one of them. I am beyond happy for you, for both of you.
Thank you, she says. Now let me feel the same for you. We've both been given a second chance to turn things around, to make our hearts happy. Don't you think Henry deserves one too?
It's a piercing thought, straight into old wounds, separating the Henry that's in front of me now from the Henry who hurt me all that time ago. I know I'm not the same person I was then. Is it too optimistic to believe he isn't either?
Please don't hide from what you want, Grace. Believe me, you'll live to regret it.
We chat until the fire burns low, listening to the untold stories of Dottie and Althea's history. My heart soaring and breaking and bursting, all the while thinking of what Dottie would say to me as a little girl when my wishes failed to come true. That though I might not always get what I wish for, sometimes I'll get what I need instead. I've just hung up when I hear crunching stones in the distance. The garden gate swings open. Henry jumps when he sees me.
Grace,
he whispers, slapping his chest. You scared me. He's alone. I look at the stars and say, thank God. I know Henry hears.
Hey, did you have a nice evening?
I try to sound bright, but land firmly in bitter. It was fine, he says, almost disinterested. I feel like I should drop it, given what I've put him through, but I can't stop thinking about what Dottie has told me. Don't hide from what you want.
Just fine?
His laugh is incredulous, and deservedly so. He shakes his head before saying, What do you want me to say? That I feel like I'm going through the motions? That I'm forcing myself to feel a fraction of what I feel for you, for someone else? Because that's not what friends say to each other. I'm sorry, He steps closer. You're what, Grace? I'm having second thoughts. About us. About what I said earlier. There's a beat of silence where he studies me. Green eyes alive as they analyse this new strange situation. How much have you had to drink? This isn't like last night. I know exactly what I'm doing. Henry takes a long, slow breath. I'm sure this is just a little jealousy talking. By tomorrow you'll feel... It's bigger than that, I say. Henry is silent, patient as ever. I know I have to do this. If Dottie can be brave, then so can I. I've endured bad breakups and near misses. Every single time it chips a little bit of optimism away. All this time, I've been balancing the regret of not trying against the regret of going for it and having it all fall apart. And I want to believe that this is it. That you and I will go the whole way this time. Because honestly... I pause, trying to control my shaking voice. Losing you, losing our friendship. I couldn't do it, Henry. I already know I can't. Henry stares hard at the floor. You still think we're doomed to fail? Can you tell me, with your whole heart, that I'm the one you want? That you're not going to wake up one day and want something else? I know you can't predict the future. I know you can't see what's around the corner. But I need you to be sure, right here, right now, that there's no one else you'd rather be with. Because if there's even a hint of doubt in your mind... Grace, I want you. I've always wanted you. And I know, like I've never known before, that I'm only ever going to want you. Henry walks to me with such emotion he could cut through fire. He wraps his arms around my waist, showing me with his mouth that every single word he said is true. I fall into him, as though the air and time between us never existed. My hands cradle the back of his neck, feet arching as I pull him to my mouth. It's a kiss for the history books. A kiss rewritten. I thought nothing could top that chocolate-covered night with Henry, when we moved too fast, got in over our heads in an instant. But this kiss is better. Every agonizing minute we've been fighting it is poured into our touch. Henry sighs with relief against my mouth, his chest rising and falling in panicked pants. It's exactly how I feel. In grave danger, but too high to care. He walks me backwards until I'm up against the glass patio door. It gives him more leverage to lean into me, to deepen our touch. I need you so badly, Grace, he says. I want to take you upstairs and ruin you the way you've ruined me. Too late, I think. You already have. He drops his mouth to my neck, his hands finding my bum, lifting me closer, pulling us flush. All the fires that died between us are roaring again. It's muscle memory, the way I reach into the front of his jeans, touching him the way only I know how, making his eyes close, his thighs tense, his mouth curse my name. I'm drunk on the power. A personalised Henry map in my mind leading all the way to his unravelling. If you, he says, if you keep touching me like that, I'm not going to last. His pleading eyes find mine, but I'm not showing him any mercy. Good. The moan that rumbles through Henry transforms into a growl as he grabs me again, lifting me through the double doors, past the kitchen, into the living room, where I fall back onto the camper bed. The frame creaks. I don't know if this will survive both of us sleeping on it, I whisper between kisses. I assure you, I have no intention of getting any sleep. We both knew where this was leading, the unavoidable, but his admission changes everything. No more holding back. No reason to. We're tugging at each other, ripping and tearing. My shoes fly away. My hoodie lands in the shadows. Cotton stretches in my fists. His shirt button rips off, rolling between the cracks in the floor. A souvenir for the house. A commemoration of this moment, where he pulls my dress up and throws my legs over his shoulders. He yanks my underwear to the side and pauses for a second. It feels like 5 long years. I don't know who's going to enjoy this more, me or you. Me, I say, desperate. Definitely me. Don't fucking bet on it. He kisses me with so much intensity I forgot where I am and cry out. The only let-ups are the little pauses where he laughs and tells me to shush. And I'm trying, I really am, but it's a battle I'm prepared to lose. Unlike me, he doesn't have a map, but somehow he knows exactly where to go, devouring me like he's waited his whole life for the opportunity. I'm shaking, digging my heels into his back, bucking my hips as I arch closer to his mouth. Henry, I rasp. I can't. I need more. You'll get all of me, he says, into my skin, not slowing until I'm biting my hand to stop from screaming, until I'm tensing and trembling underneath him, everything turning black, then to luminous colour, green. His eyes as he looks up at me with a self-satisfied smirk. That was... you... Oh my God! He laughs, adjusting himself. Do I get a gold star? You'll get way more than that. Henry steps out of his jeans while I catch my breath, but I barely settle before the need resurges. The need to be close, to remove every single barrier between us, to feel his skin all over me, inside me. I lean over to my bag on the side, the box of condoms Sasha insisted I take. Thank God for Sasha. How lucky do you think you're getting? Henry says, when he sees the bulk box. I'm only one man. Oh, believe me, you're the lucky one, I say. My dress hits the floor. Henry watches as I slide off my underwear before climbing on top of him and sinking him inside me. Grace, he sighs. He doesn't close his eyes. He keeps them fixed on me, as if one blink is too much absence. The lucky one. The words linger. A long-forgotten memory hovers in my mind. My restaurant. Me and him. The crying, the cursing, the lying. I push it away. It doesn't belong here anymore. This is what's real. The way he's looking at me like he could love me for a lifetime. The way his body feels like heaven under my touch. The pad of his thumb traces my lip, swirling down my neck. Your mouth, your skin, your everything, Grace. It's killed me not touching you. Before I can stop myself, I'm groaning out the words. I've missed you so, so much. I miss you every minute I'm not near you, he replies. I grind deeper into him, hearing an almighty creak, then a thud as the leg of the camper bed buckles under us. We fall to the floor, but nothing can stop this. Seamlessly, Henry lifts me, pinning me against the wall, his arms holding me steady as he slides himself back inside me. He finds the spot I need him most, and my thighs shake, and my vision blurs. There, Henry, there, I say, through ravished breaths. I know, he's telling me in sharp grunts, increasing his force. He's on the edge, eyes glazing in pleasure, holding on until I get there first. The realization hits that this will all be over soon. The thought alone makes me want to cry. I grip my fingertips into his skin, holding him as tight as my body will allow. I don't know what happened to me, what caused me to be thrown back here, or if I'll ever know for sure. But maybe it's this feeling right here, powerful enough to change space and time. A feeling so pure it begs to be lived twice. Never let me go, I say. The pressure builds, low in my stomach. My heart feeling so full it's on the precipice of splitting open. Please don't ever let me go. Never, he replies, eyes locked on mine. I can see how much this means to him. He wraps his hand behind my neck, pulling our mouths together. And it's the natural tenderness, combined with the deep thrust of his hips, that sends me completely over the edge. and out of my mind in love with him. Again. The next morning, the house is quiet. A sleepy, hungover lull. Henry's birthday balloons and banners look messy and over the top in the bright morning light. The camper bed is flat against the floor. I notice my bra hanging from the fireplace. Henry's boxers landed by the front door. It can't even be six, but I'm very aware that if someone comes downstairs to this scene, we'll be busted. And I'm not ready to share this yet. I want to protect this place where there is no later. No, what next? Just Henry and me, skin on skin. I put my hand on his warm chest, fingertips brushing the light hairs. Henry, I whisper. He wakes with a smile and tired eyes. Tell me I didn't dream it, he says. With so much hope, it makes me giggle. If you're dreaming, then so am I. As our sleepy gazes connect, I see something new there. Something I've never known before. Or perhaps I never thought to look for it. If I had to label it, I'd call it certainty, tinged with a little relief. The look you might make when your mind screams, finally. He brings his hand to my cheek, pulling my mouth to his for a long kiss. And whatever I was about to say evaporates. All thoughts replaced with the need to touch him again. And Henry feels it too, because within minutes we're entwined, slowly and silently rocking together. In the golden light, I can see every expression. The way he buries his mouth into my skin to hold back the moans. The way his dark eyebrows pinch together in concentration. Studying every inhale of my breath until he's got me right where he wants me. Collapsing into him, his arms around me as I shake against him. Still, silent and breathless, a floorboard creaks above us, reminding us how old this house is, how well sound travels. Do you think they heard us? I whisper. His smirk is the hottest thing I've ever seen. I think the whole coastline heard us, he replies. I put on his black t-shirt and a pair of shorts, while Henry grabs our strewn clothes from the night before and folds them into a neat pile on the lopsided bed. I head to the kitchen. Better whip up an apology quick then. Henry's hands-on as we make breakfast. He grills the bacon and I lay the table, giving him a kiss every time I brush by him. A door slams upstairs. It's like an alarm. There are minutes until the chaos descends, until last night is officially a memory, this comfortable flow between us, wide open for all to see. Henry grabs my wrist and pulls me into his chest, wrapping his arms around me. Last night was, he begins saying. Perfect, I finish. I was gonna go with fucking incredible, but your word works too. I take a lungful of his scent, closing my eyes, trying to hold on to this moment, to place it deep inside me. So no matter what happens, I'll always have this moment. This, Henry. This is the beginning, right? He asks, voice nervous. You and me? I look up at him. He's so beautiful I could cry. If that's what you want, he continues, because I still mean what I said. I don't want anyone else. There's no one else I could ever feel this way about. But if it's too soon, if you still need... I need you, I say. God, it feels so good to finally admit it. I need you, Henry. He beams, like he's won a prize. So it's official. You're my girlfriend. I'm your girlfriend, I reply, fighting the bubbling sensation in my chest. It's like my heart is on rewind, going back to the moment I fell in love with him. Only better, because this time I'm going to make it last. We hear footsteps on the stairs. Marcus and Ali dressing and smiling. Called it, Marcus shouts. I said they were going to screw. Did we make a bet? Feel like someone owes me money for this. Leave them alone, Ali says. It's sweet. You don't need to make it sordid. Ali and Henry share a look, reading each other in the way they do. It's Marcus being Marcus. But Henry scowls with distaste, wrapping his arms tighter around me. Sasha and Roman are far more discreet. Roman, in the most wonderful way, couldn't care less. And Sasha saves her excitement for when we lock eyes, giving me a bright smile, crinkling her nose like everything is right with the world. And that's the best way to describe it, because it's what I feel too. The last piece of the puzzle, what I've wanted for so long, years longer than anyone will ever know. A start as fresh as the morning air.
So, who wants bacon?
Henry turns back to the grill, and I fix my eyes on his backside as he bends, so glad I no longer have to pretend I don't want to check him out every 10 seconds.
We also have marinated tofu, I say.
Everyone groans, so I only prepare enough for myself. I'm taking plates to the table, squeezing around the small kitchen where Roman is pouring juice, Sasha's making coffee. I find a gap between the counter and the bodies, but accidentally knock over Ali's handbag. It crashes to the floor. Pennies and lipstick fall out, along with what looks like an unopened birthday card, with Henry's name on it. Roman spots it too. He picks it up.
Think this is yours, mate? He says.
No!
Ali leaps, too late to stop the exchange.
Not that one!
She shouts. It's already in Henry's hand. He looks at the return address on the back, then to Ali, with a dark glare, as if he knows exactly what it is. All he says is, When? The other day, she replies. The mood has shifted so quickly. I can't make sense of what I'm watching. You kept this from me. Henry is shaking, his eyes confused and hurt. For days.
Is anyone else lost?
Marcus says with a laugh. The tension only builds.
I was waiting for the right time, Ali says to Henry. She looks at the rest of us. I don't want you to read it in front of everyone.
Ali, you don't get to decide this, Henry replies, the intensity of a yell, the volume of a whisper. He can't see anyone but her. I grip the plate I'm holding so tight it's a wonder it doesn't crack.
What is it? Have you written him a love letter or something?
Marcus, clearly feeling as unsettled as I do, grabs the envelope from Henry's hands. Ali snatches it back.
How dare you?
She says quickly. The first time she's ever spoken to Marcus with the sharpness he deserves.
It's from his parents.
I gasp. I almost drop the plate. His parents? His dead parents? I'm hearing this wrong. Surely. The conversation calms after this, with Marcus laughing it off. Ali hands the card to Henry, their silence thick with a conversation they'll save for later. Henry walks into the living room, puts it in his bag, then plates the bacon, as though nothing has happened. Everyone else is taking their seats, but I'm still standing in the middle of the kitchen holding a plate of tofu, frantically trying to figure out if this glitch changed more than our futures. If it changed his history. Brought his parents back from the grave. Henry finally looks at me, eyes full of sadness, his tight lips holding back whatever it is that threatens to burst out of him. I can't call him out on this without looking completely insane. And given the way a birthday card has turned him from the happiest person in the world to a tense, jagged version of himself, I'm not sure I'm ready to know the truth. He softens when he sees my confusion, kissing my temple as he passes me.
It's okay, he whispers. I'll explain.
I join him at the table, outwardly smiling, inwardly crumbling. They say the most obvious answer is usually the right one. But that means Henry lied to me before. He lied to my face about his parents being dead. Which makes me wonder what else he might have lied to me about. What he hid. What he swore to me meant nothing. Henry lifts his drink, swallows some water, and I swallow the fear that I perhaps already know the answer.
Chapter 21. Henry, 5 years earlier. Ali moved out the Friday before Halloween. I remember it vividly because I put my entire foot into a pumpkin. Bloody hell, I said. Who put that there? Ali laughed, grabbing the last of the cardboard boxes from me and carrying it into Marcus's flat. That would be me? You were supposed to admire it, not kick it to death. Then I suggest not putting it on the doorstep where I'm carrying everything you've ever owned into your new home. I scraped pumpkin seeds from the tip of my shoe onto her doormat. Where is Marcus anyway? I thought he was going to be helping. He got stuck at work. Those IT emergencies, hey? Life or death. Ali gave me one of her signature looks, moody. The words shut up beamed from her eyes. I did. Then I lugged one of five heavy suitcases from the hall into the bedroom for her. It was a small place, all white and grey. I could guess what Marcus was going to say about all her pink stuff. It never bothered me, but Marcus seemed like the type of guy who wanted everything simple, minimalist. Which was why he was probably purposely ducking out on being here when the woman he refused to call his girlfriend moved into his flat. Oh, man, I hated him. Even more so after lugging Ali's wardrobe up three flights because his lift was out of order. Thank you for this, she said as I wiped sweat from my brow. You know I'll happily return the favour when you find a house. That felt like it was never going to happen. I thought the hardest part of house hunting was the decade I spent saving for it. I didn't ever consider that by the time I had the deposit, there might not be anything worth buying. You're going to help me lug a wardrobe up some stairs, I said skeptically. Hell yes, Ali replied, flexing her quite impressive, actually, bicep. I've already made it my new fitness goal. She disappeared into the kitchen. Do you want some food? I'm going to order a takeaway, she called. I checked my watch. I was already 20 minutes late, and I still needed to get across town at the height of rush hour. I can't. I'm surprising Grace by cooking her dinner. You? Cook? Ali laughed. I know, but I'm trying. It's the thought that counts. Well, let's hope thoughts cure food poisoning. Grace had been working non-stop, preparing to open the restaurant, sending me selfies of her in a hard hat on site, and then my personal favourite, shots of her brand new head chef uniform with nothing underneath it. And I was so excited for her, so proud. But we were like ships in the night. I would text her goodnight as she was wishing me a good morning. She'd come home as I was leaving for work. I missed her. I planned to ask her to move in with me once I'd found a place, but I was getting sick of waiting. I wanted it to be her home as much as it was mine, for her to be in it with me every exciting step of the way. So I was bumping up my plan and asking her tonight. Grace had been at Dottie's all day, and I was going to make sure we enjoyed every minute of our rare, uninterrupted night together. I opened her front door, weighed down with bags of groceries, candles, and the new cookbook I'd picked up in the hospital foyer and studied like a medical journal. I dropped the bags in the hallway, hearing talking in the kitchen. Grace was on the phone. Her voice was hushed, but her tone cut right through the room. Well, I was hoping you might support me in some way, she was saying. No, not only with money. With words, Mum. Some business advice. Encouragement, you know, what real humans do. Not heartless robots like you and Dad. Yeesh. I hung back, not sure whether to walk out or make myself known. The bouquet of roses I had in my hands felt a little insufficient. The speakerphone was tinny, but I could hear her mother perfectly. She was eloquent, like a Disney villain. Grace, it's not that your father and I do not care, it's that we're not seeing anything to care about. You've already told me how you failed to take the necessary steps to keep to your agreed budget. You cannot expect us to hand over our hard-earned savings for something we know you're not capable of. You've always been the same, darling. I don't know why you continue to exert yourself when you know it'll end in tears. It always does. I am a grown woman, Grace snarled back. But you'll always be the girl who turned to cookery because she couldn't pass maths and English. Skills that would have come in handy right about now, don't you think? The line went quiet. I resisted the urge to storm in there and scream profanities at the woman I was yet to meet. Mum, Grace said, her voice so broken a protective swell coursed through me. I am sorry, but we will not support this endeavour. You've got yourself into this mess and now you need to deal with the consequences of it. You're wrong, Grace hissed back. You're not sorry and this isn't going to fail. The line went quiet again. And if I hadn't been so furious, I'd have smiled. That's my girl. Grace put her hands in her hair, then spun around. The scream she unleashed when she saw me was feral. The phone went flying. I swirled the flowers, fighting off an imaginary attacker. Henry, I thought you were a ghost. I put my hands on my knees until I could breathe normally. What gave me away? I've been at Dottie's watching ghost hunting shows all day. She clutched her chest and laughed. For a second, I'd forgotten I'd given you a key. I held out the flowers. Half the white petals were on the floor. Grace smiled and pulled me into her. I held her for a moment until she stopped shaking and her breathing became smooth. I'll knock next time. No, I like you being here, right when I need you. She buried her face into my chest. I kissed her head. I was going to surprise you with dinner, I said. Well, you achieved the element of surprise perfectly. She laughed against me. You're so warm. I lifted a wardrobe. She looked up at me with confusion in her eyes. Just because? I was helping Ali move into Marcus's flat. I turned to grab the bag of food, and even though I wasn't looking at her anymore, I felt the way that changed things. The way the toxic air seeped back in. The same tension that had been there when she was on the phone to her mother. All day. All afternoon. I pulled out a bag of pasta. I put some water on to boil. Oh, she said. I knew that, oh. I'd heard that, oh, multiple times before. I'd promised Ali I would try and make this work between them, but in that moment I tried for Grace. She's a really nice person, I said. Yep. She wants to get to know you better. Yep. Please, Grace. I put my hand on the counter, body open. I had nothing to hide. Yet the tension remained. The only good thing about Ali and Marcus getting closer was that it would hopefully give Grace some confidence that Ali wasn't a threat. But this felt like an extension. So long as Ali and I were close, this fear of hers would sit under the surface. I'd looked at this from her perspective. What if I'd been cheated on and there was a guy called Sven, some thick-cut Norwegian lumberjack who happened to be her best friend and roommate? My fingers strained with angst, just imagining. But then I thought of how I felt about Ali. Platonic. Familial. It wasn't the same. I wish I could open my brain and show you what I'm thinking, I said. Prove that there's nothing for you to worry about. Her attention snapped to my chest, and I wondered if it wasn't the contents of my head she was worried about, more my heart. Oh God, you're right. I'm sorry, Grace said. She ran her hand over her face, and I noticed how tired she looked. I should make more effort with Ali. She's important to you. So she's important to me. I'm not myself right now. Whenever I speak to my mother, I get a little spiky. She knows exactly what to say to have me feeling second best. I shouldn't take it out on you. I get it, I said, relieved. That's why I'm here, to take the weight off. Have a seat. I'll pour you a wine. How are you so perfect? Grace's head dropped to one side with a dreamy expression. I smiled, hoping she'd never see me any differently. She took a seat at the table, then opened her laptop. The first sip of her favourite red wine made her noticeably more relaxed. I diced some tomatoes into uneven chunks and slid them into a pan. I thought accuracy was my strong point, yet they looked nothing like the ones in the cookbook picture. About that phone call, I said. Want to talk about it? It was family drama. Parents, hey? Who'd have 'em? I joked. Grace's upper body tensed. Oh, I feel awful. Moaning about mine when... It's fine. Please, don't worry. I drove the knife into some basil. The opportunity for a confession was right there. But then I thought of her calling me perfect, of my plan to ask her to live with me. If I confessed, the entire evening would be engulfed with tense conversations, me reliving a past I was desperate to forget. Not yet. Not now. It sounded kind of serious, I said. Is everything okay with the rest? That's when I spotted her shoulders jolting up and down, heard the whispered curse that left her lips. She was crying. I pulled her into my arms. I've ruined everything, she said. I thought I could fix it. I could move some money around, cut back on some expenditures. I cancelled everything that wasn't essential. I downgraded the cookware spec, but I'm still coming up short. I don't even have enough to open. But that's in 2 weeks. You've got every table booked, sent the press invites, you've spent a fortune getting everything ready, I said before I could think. I know. It's a bottomless pit of money at this point. It felt as if there was a locked door that Grace had creaked open and now a mountain of crap had fallen out. The acidic smell of burned tomatoes filled the kitchen. Damn it. I took them off the heat, drained the mushy pasta. I sat beside her, face aglow from the laptop light. Start at the beginning, I said. What's happened? She finally told me about her lack of savings, how Dottie had made herself a guarantor for a large loan, putting her bungalow up as collateral. It had all been going as planned, budgeted down to the last penny. But a month prior, there'd been a blockage in the customer toilets, which was then revealed to be a major plumbing issue. Insurance wouldn't cover it because it was evidenced on the property survey, but Grace had overlooked it. I got lost in the excitement of it all. The thrill of having my own kitchen, she said. I missed things I should have seen, and now there's no money left to open. I hoped Mum and Dad might help. I've never, ever asked them for anything before. I thought they'd be proud of me. I thought they'd see it as an investment. Well, you heard how that went. Grace was shaking, big, thick tears streaming down her cheeks. I've messed everything up. If I don't fix this, if I can't turn it around, Dottie, she gasped. How much do you need? Grace loaded a spreadsheet on the laptop. I frowned. I wasn't an expert, but I mostly knew what I was looking at. She'd budgeted well from the looks of things. Modest spending, essentials only. It was the plumbing issue that had plunged her into the negatives. I shook my head as I studied it. This had to be salvageable. There was no way Dottie was going to lose her home over this. There was no way Grace would get so close to her dream only to fall at the final hurdle. I need $10,000 to cover the outstanding refurbishment work, a couple more to pay the advance on the supplier contracts, then some float money, so I can actually open the doors and pay my staff. 15 at least. What about the bank? I've reached my lending limit. I can't believe it's gone so utterly pear-shaped. I am so, so stupid. She was crying into my shoulder when the idea came to me. The words I'd said to Ali weeks before. Love is giving someone everything you have, the best of you, the clothes off your back, the last crumb, all of it. I have money, I said. My deposit. I won't need it for a few months at least. That money was recompense for the worst things that had ever happened to me, and 8 years of saving every spare penny, of scrimping and playing judgment games with interest rates. The reward for sweat and sleep deprivation, of holding patients' hands as they died and waving others goodbye at the hospital door. It's what got me through every hard day and was the icing on the cake of good ones. The dream of finally owning my own home. But Grace needed it. And it wasn't as if I'd found a house yet. I had time. Henry. She said my name like a warning, pulling away, shaking her head. Take it. Grace closed her eyes, and I knew she was too proud to say yes. It was one thing to take it from her parents, who some could argue should be falling over themselves to support the daughter they'd done nothing for. A whole other to take it from her boyfriend of less than a year, whose bank balance was a fraction of theirs. Look, I know in the grand scheme of things we haven't been together long enough to be exchanging money like this, and it might feel like you're asking too much of me. But you're not asking. I offered. She took my hands in hers, voice soft. You have no idea how much that means to me. And I am so grateful you would even consider doing this, but no, I can't take your money. I was expecting a little resistance, but not a flat-out refusal. Grace, you can. It's your money. It's a loan, I clarified, with incredible interest terms, an investment that I'm not looking to make a return on. I ran my hand over her cheek. Her eyes darted to mine with wide-eyed wonder. Why would you do that? The answer was obvious. Because I was hopelessly in love with her. The thought of saying it made my mouth go dry and my heart erratic. I still hated those words. Every time they inched closer to my lips, I saw myself as a kid again, begging. Pleading for something that was never going to come. Fuck. I pushed the memory away. Because I kind of like you, I said instead. I tickled her waist until she smiled. She knows. She has to know. And you've worked so hard for this, I added. I know you can do this, that you can make your dreams come true. I'm not about to sit and watch your restaurant come to a screeching halt for the woman who means the most to me to lose everything when I'm able to help. She watched me for a moment, looking deep into my eyes. You're sure? I smiled. I've never been surer of anything. Oh my God, Henry. I promise you'll have every penny back before you offer on a house. Grace's voice was squeaking with gratitude. She bounced with an urgency I'd never seen before. I can speak to a solicitor, get some kind of contract drawn up. It's fine. I trust you. I wrapped my arms around her, kissed her hard. You're so amazing. I can't believe you would do this for me, that you'd... Don't sing my praises too much, I said, glancing over at the gloopy burnt food now in the sink. You might have to make dinner. Grace laughed, kissing me again. A small price to pay. She sank into another long cuddle, whispering, thank you, as she snuggled against my chest. And I felt like I could fight the world for her. And I would have, even if I'd known I'd end up losing.
Chapter 22. Grace. Now. Like most things, I'm not a natural at social media. I need 50 takes to get things right. I splash grease and oil on the camera. I waste ingredients because I chop things out of shop. But Henry has more patience than anyone I've ever known. Even when he's exhausted, he spends his free time helping me film, being a second pair of eyes on my edits, researching hashtags and trends and discoverability. My biggest cheerleader. He always was. Which is why, when I get invited to cook at a festival in the Hampshire countryside, he's the only person I want with me. The weather is colder now, but the organisers have scraped all the orange and brown leaves from the grass into little piles, created cooking stands between them. There are big and burly grillers with huge American-style barbecues. There are local farmers displaying a rainbow selection of produce, entrepreneurs selling jams, pickles and chutneys. And then there's me, at a simple stand in the corner, the vegetable girl. My name hangs from a flimsy homemade sign above my head. I have a small gas stove, a little oven, a wooden crate of vegetables, and a Britney Spears-style microphone. I almost said no when they called me to offer the gig. It had been so long since I'd cooked in front of anyone but Henry, and the numbers the festival was pulling were probably more than all the people I've ever cooked for combined. Not that I could afford to say no. My winnings from the races weren't going to last forever. Henry was the one who convinced me I could do it, that I'd enjoy it once I got there. And he was right, I realise. He stands on the sidelines, wearing a thick jumper and gilet, handing out leaflets with my social handles on to everyone who watches me cook. It's been a couple of months since Solcombe. He never explained about the card, and I couldn't bear to ask. I'm trying so hard to be brave, to focus on this timeline, this version of him. So I give him the benefit of the doubt. I trust that he'll tell me what I need to know when he's ready for me to know it. I'm blending up a vegan mayonnaise, answering as many audience questions as I can, when I notice Henry check his phone, then disappear into the crowd. I keep cooking, asking people to blind taste test between a store brand mayo and mine, but I keep an eye out for him. He returns 5 minutes later, during one of my few scheduled breaks. Behind him is a tank of a human. This man is wearing a t-shirt I'm convinced he picked from the children's section. It's so tight. Plus, he's not wearing a jacket on what must be the coldest day since summer left. Henry smiles as he introduces us. Grace, this is my brother Tom. We've been trying to meet up for ages, and then we bump into each other here of all places. I thought I'd bring him over to meet you. I'm in so much shock I can't keep it from my face. I never got the impression they were very close. In the year Henry and I were together before, he never met up with his brothers. If he did, he never mentioned it. I look between them, trying to assess if this change is for the better or worse, but judging by the happiness on Henry's face, it has to be the former. Oh my goodness, hi! I wipe my hand on my apron before shaking Tom's. He smiles and says hello. He's got dark hair with a few silver flecks, a thick beard. He's 5 years older than Henry, and seeing him now is like seeing the version of Henry I saw on the escalator. Older, matured, and so damn handsome. I can't believe how alike you look.
Lucky for him.
Tom ruffles Henry's hair before being battered away by his little brother. Easy, you're older and slower than I am, Henry says, which is true, but while Henry is tall with broad shoulders, Tom is a walking action man. So this is Grace, Tom says. He looks me up and down. The Dunn brothers have eyes that could pierce brick. Henry loops a hand around my waist. My girlfriend, chef extraordinaire, he says. I am never getting used to the pride in his voice. I saw, he says, looking over at the small crowd waiting for me to start cooking again. Impressive setup you've got here. The barbecue guys are getting pretty pissed with the attention the vegetable girl is getting. I laugh.
I'd be lying if I said I hadn't noticed how much interest my stand is attracting. I expect it's mostly curiosity.
What do you mean you can make chocolate cake without dairy?
Someone hollered earlier, before taking a seat and watching me bake an entire sponge. When I handed out warm samples, they devoured it in disbelief. Tom tells us he's here supporting some friends with a cider startup. I recognise the company instantly. They're soon to be a household name. My allotted cooking time approaches again, and I step away to prepare. The brothers hover behind me. I try not to listen. I swear, I try. But the change in Henry's tone rings out like a warning.
Did you hear from them?
Henry says. He's got his back to me, so I can't see his expression. But Tom shakes his head.
They know better than to contact me, he says. Don't tell me you have. A couple of letters.
Tom groans.
We know this ends in disappointment.
Call me a glutton for punishment, Henry replies. A jolt of nerves shoots down my spine.
Aren't we all? I don't want to look back and have regrets. I want to get some closure before it's too late.
I move away, adding basil to a blender, pouring in oil and paying no attention to quantity.
You don't need closure. You need a sledgehammer.
I think violence is what got us into this mess, Henry sighs.
I mean proverbially, to cut the cord.
Tom's voice deepens.
Don't open that door. You're not going to find what you're looking for behind it. Our parents are in prison for a reason. Let them rot.
Prison? Did he say prison? There's a multitude of conversations floating through my mind. The lies and deceptions. Truths mixed in that I can't quite grasp. I press the button on the blender and liquefied herbs fly out everywhere. It covers me, and the three people in the front row. I stop the segment, grabbing towels, apologizing profusely. The guy in the middle shrugs, runs his finger over his shoulder and says,
Love a 4D experience.
Henry and Tom have stopped their chat, staring at me in wide-eyed surprise. I hold up the blender lid. The only word I can force myself to say is, Oops. It's later, when we're packing up my stand, that I finally build up the courage to ask him about it. There are only a few security guards milling around, some organizers in high-vis jackets stack chairs in the rain. Tom seems nice, I say.
He is.
Henry nods. Water pools on the tent above us, dripping in thick lines to the grass. He suggested we have dinner with him soon. With Oliver and his partner, too.
I'd love you to meet my brothers properly.
I was thinking of inviting everyone over to my new place, once I have one.
That sounds lovely, I say.
I'll cook. Beans on toast? Yummy. Henry laughs. Oh, did I not mention? I've been learning a few things.
Really?
Such as?
That tomato is a fruit,
but you always need to preheat the oven. That people sniff and feel vegetables before buying them for a reason, not because they are weirdly turned on by them. I burst into giggles.
Sounds like you have an excellent teacher.
His eyebrows rise flirtatiously.
I do. Helps that she's hot as hell, too.
Henry leans over to kiss me. It starts off brief, then transcends into something deeper, telling me with his mouth how happy he is. I tell him with mine that I've never felt more at ease, as though I finally know exactly where I'm supposed to be. Then I pause as the joy in my chest is replaced with a coarse anxiety. He's still holding back, concealing truths. He doesn't trust me enough to let me in. He notices my abrupt stop, running his hand over my cheek, a slight concern in his voice. You okay? My confession that I overheard him talking about his parents is on the tip of my tongue when my attention snags on a woman running across the grass, mud flicking behind her heels as she moves, a pale trench coat over her head that looks like it needs wringing out. She runs straight to my stand, saved by the woman-shaped bell.
Grace, she says. Grace Monroe?
Yes. She drops her head, catching her breath. Henry and I share a concerned look. Are you okay? Do you need help? He says. She laughs,
She's got a neat updo and flawless makeup, despite being soaked. She doesn't look like she's dressed for a relaxed afternoon at a food festival. More like she's about to present the evening news.
I could have done. A few hours ago, when my train got stuck at Basingstoke, I thought I was going to miss the whole event.
Oh, I'm sorry, I say. We're finished now, but I'm hoping to do some more...
I should explain, she interrupts. She holds out her hand for me to shake.
My name is Zola Edebeo. I work with Celine Duval.
Celine Duval? Oh my God. My breath hitches up a notch.
She was aware of some of your videos online. They're impressive, I'll admit. I'm here to sample your food to see if it tastes as good as it looks.
Celine Duval has seen my videos?
She knows my name? Henry and I share another look.
Disbelief.
He instinctively knows how important this is and springs into action. We've packed up most of it, but I think there's some leftover mayonnaise somewhere. Henry's peeling lids off containers. Unaware that you don't feed leftover scraps to anyone associated with Celine Duval. It would be like serving the Queen day-old McDonald's.
We were inundated with interest, I say, thinking on my feet as I put a palm over Henry's hand. I really wouldn't want to serve you anything that wasn't fresh.
Oh, that is a shame. If only I'd been here sooner. If only. The subtext of that comment hangs between us. She didn't come all the way here for the fun of it. And whatever reason she had is slowly disappearing. I can't let that happen.
What do you want to see?
I lunge for the packed boxes, trying and failing to think of something delicious I can whip up. I could make my viral lentil curry, but we need at least an hour, and Henry might need to do a shop run for more turmeric. Zola smiles at my enthusiasm. Given my delay, I'm a little short on time, she says. She asks me a few questions about my experience. Where I trained, where I see myself in 5 years. She's sussing me out, and I answer confidently, pushing all my nerves into a vault for when Zola is out of earshot. Henry continues packing up, giving me space, until there's a natural lull. I've finished explaining how much I admire Celine's career, that she's my biggest inspiration. Zola is silent, thinking.
I know I'm biased, Henry says. But truly, Grace is the hardest working, most dedicated person I've ever met. And her food is absolutely fantastic. There's nothing left for you to taste because there was such high demand. Check the feedback on social media tonight and you'll see. Grace is one in a million.
There's a floating sensation in my chest. My eyes fill with appreciative tears. Zola nods, as if in agreement. How is your diary looking in the next few weeks? To come to the flagship Soho restaurant and interview.
Interview?
I say the word as if it's in a foreign language.